This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Sky.
The night sky for September 2015. As the evenings draw in, the stars we see after sunset stay pretty much the same for a couple of months. And so, high in the southwest, you'll see what is called the summer triangle, the three stars, Altair in Aquila, Vega in Lyra, and Deneb in Cygnus. The brighter stars of Cygnus the Swan make up what is called the Northern Cross. The faintest of these is called Albireo, and it's not very obvious, but if you look at it through a telescope, you see a lovely double star, sort of one somewhat golden, the other bluish. It's a beautiful colour contrast. Below the summer triangle, tiny but rather sweet little constellation, Delphinus the Dolphin. Moving across, so towards the south later in the evening, we have the great square of Pegasus, the four stars making up the square, the body of the winged horse, which is upside down, of course. Starting from the top left star, which is Alpheratz, which actually is in Andromeda, it's Alpha Andromedae, moving one star to the left, round to the right a bit, to a second star, which is called Mirac, and then turning sharp right, going two stars width, you can come to the Andromeda galaxy M31, which on a dark, clear night and transparent sky you can see with your unaided eye. Moving in the opposite direction from Mirac, about the same amount as M31, is the galaxy M33, much harder to spot, but on a very transparent night, with good binoculars, you may well be able to find it. Above, we have Cassiopeia, the open W, and down to its left, that's over towards the east, we have Perseus. Between the two, it's where, in fact, the Milky Way is running along, the two wonderful clusters, it's called the Perseus Double Cluster. They're called NGC 869 and 884. But they can be picked out with binoculars and are a beautiful sight in a small telescope. Well, what about the planets? Let's start with Jupiter. It passed behind the Sun, that's called Superior Conjunction, on the 26th of August. So it's now a morning object, rising shortly before the Sun at the beginning of September, but increasingly earlier as the month progresses. So it'll be best seen at month's end when it will lie some 18 degrees above the northeast horizon at sunrise. The size of Jupiter's disk is increasing slightly. It's about 31 arc seconds. So you should be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. In contrast, Saturn can be seen after sunset low in the southwest. It lies in the eastern part of Libra, moving slowly away from the wide double star Alpha Librae, shining at a magnitude of plus 0.6. An hour after sunset, it will lie just 10 degrees above the horizon, so the atmosphere will limit our view of its 16 arc-second disk. And by month's end, it'll only be a few degrees above the horizon at sunset. So really, the first couple of weeks of this month is our last chance to observe it for a few months until it passes behind the Sun and is again visible in the morning sky. But the ring system is now opened out to 24.3 degrees. That's pretty good. So if you can see it, it's a lovely view. And you might also spot Titan, its largest satellite. Mercury can just be seen above the western horizon for the first few days of the month. It reaches greatest elongation from the Sun on the 4th of September, shining at magnitude plus 0.1. It'll be quite a challenging object, as the ecliptic is at quite a shallow angle to the horizon, and it'll be lost in twilight by mid-month, before it passes in front of the Sun, that's inferior conjunction, on the 30th of the month. Mars, along with Venus and Jupiter, is a pre-dawn object, lying in Leo, not far from Regulus, Alpha Leonis, which has a magnitude of plus 1.4. On the 25th, the salmon pink planet will lie just 47 arc minutes from the blue star Regulus, so making a very nice color contrast. Shining at magnitude plus 1.8, its disk is just 3.8 arc seconds across, so no details will be seen on its surface. Venus rises in the northeast in the pre-dawn sky, an hour and a half before the sun at the start of September, but this increases to 4 hours by month's end, as Venus is moving further away in angle from the sun. Its magnitude reaches minus 4.8 during the third week of the month. That's the brightest it ever gets. And it will show a thin crescent, 9% illuminated, 52 arc second across disk. Well, what about some highlights? Neptune came into opposition, that's when it's nearest the Earth, on the 29th of August. So it will be seen well this month. And on the night sky page on the Jodrell Bank website, you can find the chart to show you where to look. Its magnitude is plus 7.9, so it should be easily spotted in binoculars, lying in the constellation Aquarius. When due south, it rises to an elevation of about 27 degrees, so somewhat above the murk of the atmosphere. On September the 5th, before dawn, at about 0530 BST, Aldebaran, which is the orange-red star that we see in the direction of the Hyades cluster, will be occulted by the moon. That will happen at around 0530 BST, but it will vary a bit across the country, so you need to be watching a little while before that. Now, if you've got a telescope and a mount which is actually tracking Aldebaran as it passes behind the moon, you might be able to see it reappear from behind the unlit lunar disk at 0710 in what will then be a bright daylight sky. Before dawn on September the 10th, you can see Venus and a thin crescent moon. You'll need a good, low, unobstructed horizon towards the northeast. And then, should it be clear, you should be able to spot an 8% lit, very thin crescent moon, just 2 degrees to the upper left of Venus, which will then be shining at magnitude minus 4.6. On the 18th, an hour after sunset, looking southwest, you might well be able to see and spot Saturn with its nicely open rings, again not far from a waxing crescent moon. On the 25th, 1 hour before sunrise, Venus, Mars and Jupiter will be together in Leo, and that is the morning when Mars will be less than a degree just to the left of Regulus in Leo. That'll make a very nice planetary grouping. Up to their right will lie Venus, which will be dominating the morning sky. Whilst lying well below Regulus, you may well be able to see Mars. Perhaps the real highlight of this month, and let's hope it's clear, on the morning before dawn on the 28th of September, there'll be a total eclipse of the moon. And not just any moon. It's the 2015 harvest moon. It's also a supermoon to boot, with an angular diameter of 33.5 arc minutes, which is the largest apparent diameter of the year. The full eclipse lasts for 3 hours and 20 minutes, with totality starting at 0311 BST and ending at 0423. Over an hour later. The moon is passing through the southern part of the umbra, so we should expect the southern limb to appear brighter than the northern limb. At the midpoint of the eclipse, at 0347 BST, the northern limb just reaches the central part of the umbra. And then the moon will be lying at an elevation of 27 degrees above the southwest horizon. Finally, I do sometimes and try to give you some interesting objects to observe on the moon. Just have a look on the night sky page. And this month, on September the 4th and the 21st, I've highlighted the Alpine Valley. That's a rift that runs across the northern part of the Apennine Mountains, not far from the crater Plato. The valley is about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. A thin rill runs along its length. That's very hard to spot. It's quite a challenge to observe. But nevertheless, this region is a very interesting part of the lunar surface. Well, let's just hope it's clear on the morning of the 28th, and we all have a chance to see a total eclipse of the moon.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now for our southern hemisphere, here's Haritini Mogusanu with the night sky where you are.
Welcome to Aotearoa, New Zealand, where the sea surrounds us from all directions, the sky is darker than dark, and the stars are very bright. My name is Haritina Mogosanu, and today I will be your storyteller from Space Place at Carter Observatory in the Southern Hemisphere. Here in New Zealand, we are surrounded by a water world. The Pacific Ocean holds the dark night sky, which comes all the way down to the horizon, and the only signposts of the night are the patterns of the stars. We call these asterisms. The modern constellations, which are areas, patches of the sky, just like countries are on Earth, take their name from them. Asterisms are dot-to-dot doodles, patterns on the celestial firmament. Not too many things seem familiar here in the Southern Hemisphere to those of us who started our journey from the north, not even these patterns. Besides, everything is upside down to what we knew from home. For instance, as the autumn takes its rightful place in the Northern Hemisphere, here in the south we prepare for springtime. And there is more. The sun here goes through the northern part of the sky, moving from right to left on the ecliptic, as opposite to the southern part in the northern hemisphere. This makes the angle of the shadow in the morning to look just like the shadow of the other hemisphere's evening sky. Of course, here in the southern hemisphere, the sun still rises in the east and sets in the west. But if you just arrived here and it feels like evening in the morning, don't let them tell you it is only jet lag. And as I was saying, not just the light, but also the star patterns look different here. I had to get over the fact that everything as I knew it is upside down in the night sky, and to really get my bearings here in the water world, I had to unlearn everything I knew about the so-called Western night sky. For instance, the fact that for the Polynesians, the same stars can be used to make up to three different asterisms, depending on the time of the year, came as a huge surprise. I knew that in Europe, for example, where the people had to survive months of snow, the ancients foresaw the future with the help of the zodiacal constellations. But the zodiacal constellations were made of the same stars, and for millennia, the repetitive patterns were the best calendar we used to tell the seasons over and over. This is so ingrained in our collective conscious that some people use these constellations of the zodiac even today to tell the future. But isn't that what a calendar does anyway? It peers into the future. For Polynesians, these patterns changed from season to season, telling the story of their journeys. Some of their constellations, or more correctly asterisms, are huge, even stretching onto half of the sky. Some other things were constant for them too. For example, as they were roaming through the Pacific Ocean, the Polynesians observed that each island of the enormous water world had a different zenith star. They used those stars to pinpoint these islands to find their way back across the vastness of the ocean. And their descendants, who reached further south, the Maori, which translates as normal people in Polynesian language, assigned not just one zenith star, but an entire asterism constellation to the newly found island they called Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud. This constellation, asterism, is the fishing hook of Maui, Te Matawa Maui, whose stars coincide with the stars of what we know as Scorpius. The legend goes that the very first navigator, Maui, landed on the South Island, which to Maori had the shape of a canoe. From there, Maui cast his famous fish hook, the zenith constellation of New Zealand, to catch the North Island from the sea. but as the center of the Milky Way rises above the horizon, and with it the asterism of the fishhook, as seen from the South Island, this would show up exactly in the northeast. This is the direction of the North Island of New Zealand, the island that to Maori looked like a stingray, the fish. And as one of the modern Maori navigators, Hoturua Barclay Kerr, was telling me, as they navigate their waka haurua, the double hau canoes, along the shore of the South Island, the curvature of the earth makes the North Island look as if it's popping out of the sea, as if pulled by the fish hook, which would rise in the sky, lifting with it island and galaxy all together. But even for a celestial charmed fishhook, the North Island was a heavy fish. The fishing line snapped and the hook flung into the sky. As the evening falls in Aotearoa at the beginning of spring, just after sunset, you can find the fishhook up, stuck at the center of the Milky Way at zenith. All you have to do is to lift up your head and look up. At the beginning of springtime here, the Milky Way spans the sky from north to south, going through zenith. From there, the fishhook now slowly starts to drag the Milky Way down from the sky and towards the western horizon, all night long, so that night after night, the center of the galaxy appears lower and lower in the evening sky. Here, in the Southern Hemisphere, we are very lucky to see the Milky Way in all its brightness and beauty. Many of the brightest stars are scattered along or near it. Starting from north is Albireo, the beautiful orange and blue double star in the constellation of Cygnus, or the Northern Cross. On the left-hand side and close to the Milky Way lays Vega, the fifth brightest star in the sky. It is due north at dusk and sets in the late evening. Vega is 52 times brighter than the Sun and 25 light years away. On the right-hand side, a celestial dolphin is flipping from the galactic river, revealing its two famous stars, Swallowchin and Rotanev, the anagram of the astronomer Nicolaus Venator, who wanted never to be forgotten. Just a few degrees higher up in the sky than the dolphin, the Eagle is flying Altair towards the galactic river. Keep lifting your head up and follow the Milky Way. If you have a telescope powerful enough, you will find Pluto right there near the teapot's handle in Sagittarius. But at 14th magnitude, you would need a large aperture telescope of 10 inches or more to see it, if Pluto is not an easy target. The fishhook of Maui in Scorpius, it's home of the bright star red giant Antares, or Rehua in Maori. And in between Sagittarius and Scorpius, there are beautiful deep sky objects, and now it's a great time in the Southern Hemisphere to hunt for them. They include the Lagoon Nebula, or Messier 8, the Omega Nebula, or Messier 17, also known as the Horseshoe Nebula, or Swan Nebula, and the Trifid Nebula, or Messier 20, a large nebula containing some very young, hot stars. To find directions in the Southern Hemisphere, all we need to do is to follow the arch of the Milky Way. On it, midway down the southwest sky, almost opposite Altair, are the pointers, Beta and Alpha Centauri. They point down to Crux, the Southern Cross. There are about 27 ways to find south here, and most of them involve the Southern Cross. As a circumpolar constellation at the beginning of the spring's evening sky, Crux appear almost in the 3 o'clock position on the 60 degrees declination circle. Inside it, the brilliant jewel box discovered by Nicolas-Louis de la Caille and baptized so by John Herschel, or NGC 4755, is an open cluster of stars. At the center of it, a blue giant, a red giant, and another blue giant stars align to make the more modern asterism of the traffic light. But of course, you will need a telescope to see this. Nothing beats the southern sky when it comes to globular clusters. Starting with the easy one, Omega Centauri is the largest globular cluster in the Milky Way galaxy and home to about 10 million stars. At a diameter of roughly 150 light years, it can be seen as a fuzzy star roughly near the Southern Cross. In telescopes, it appears like very delicate lace, and it takes skill to use peripheral vision to see it, but it's worth the effort. The eternal rival of Omega Centauri is a bit more clear in the telescope, but elusive. 47 Tucanae globular cluster hides in the constellation of the exotic bird the toucan. But once again, the Southern Cross can help. If you imagine that Crookes could also look like a giant arrowhead, you will see it pointing left to a star on the other side of its declination circle. The star in question is Achenar, laying at the end of the river Eridanus that comes all the way from Orion. Our imaginary trajectory following the arrowhead takes us in between two fuzzy clouds, two-thirds from Crookes towards Achenar. These are the Magellanic Clouds, the famous galaxies passing by our Milky Way. 47 Tucanae is located on the right-hand side of the axis, sitting beside the small Magellanic Cloud. But this globular cluster belongs to us, albeit on the outskirts of the Milky Way, roughly 15,000 light-years away from Earth and 120 light-years across. In ideal conditions, should look almost the size of the full moon. The astrophotographers of the southern skies have a great debate each year trying to prove which globular cluster is more beautiful than the other, Omega Centauri or 47 Tucanae. Which side are you on? And talking about the full moon, the other attractions of the sky here in the southern hemisphere in September are, of course, the planet and the moon. In Maori, the moon is called Marama, which literally can mean the white, ma, light, ma, coming from the sun, Terra. The harbinger of the spring is a supermoon. A supermoon happens when the full moon coincides with when the moon is closest to Earth, also known as perigee. Supermoons occur every 14th full moon. The opposite of a supermoon is a micromoon. And the planets, Mercury, Fero in Maori, and Saturn, Parearao, are small but bright in the evening sky. At the beginning of the month, Mercury is making its best evening sky appearance of the year, low in the west. Cream-colored Saturn is northwest of the zenith at dusk and midway down the western sky by late evening. Brilliant Venus, Kopure Reata, it's the morning star for Maori and rises in the east 2 hours before the sun. A telescope shows Earth-sized Venus shining as a thin crescent from 60 million kilometers away. On 21st of September, Venus displays its greatest illuminated extent as the morning star. This means that for the next several mornings, our morning star Venus will be shining at or near its greatest brilliancy. This concludes our Jotcast for September from Space Place at Carter Observatory. To finish, I have chosen a beautiful Maori kōrero from the book Song of the Old Tides by Barry Brailsford, which depicts exactly how I felt when I started learning about the Southern Hemisphere sky. Everything is not always as it seems. Assume nothing. Assumptions readily close the door on all that is and might be. The open mind sees beyond the breaking wave to the distant shore. It takes the longer view and sees more. And as the Maori say, E fiti anana fetu o te rangi, the stars are shining in the sky, ko takoto akene ko papa tuanuku, whilst Mother Earth lays beneath. Kia kaha, and clear skies from the Space Place at Carter Observatory in Aotearoa, New Zealand.